almost on time. Just 1 minute late, I feel like, is on time for us. The playoffs, Brent, finally here, man. Pretty cool. A long year. A lot has gone on. And a lot of teams worked really hard. I think it's kind of cool. Some of the teams we're going to talk about, like, never have a chance to even get here. Like, never have that. Like, I feel like Penn State every year we talk about them. Like, just being on the outside, right? Like, so close to getting in. Now they finally get their chance. Obviously, other teams too, and big storylines. But what are you most looking forward to this weekend, homie?
I'm looking forward just to see the atmospheres, honestly. Because we talked about, hey, they're getting home playoff games. And what's those atmospheres like? Because do or die situation, how, you know, the temperatures in certain places, it's not going to be warm. Like, so, and obviously there's one situation where maybe things get a little tight, at least tighter than others, given recent events in Columbus, Ohio. So, like, I'm looking for the atmosphere. And looking, by the way, 8 o'clock Friday night, noon, 4, 8 on Saturday, just all day, vegging out. It's Christmas break. Like, it is heaven.
But how great is it? Like, all you dudes out there, like, we're all always looking for an excuse to do jack diddly all day long. You got it, homie. Like, babe, it's the first ever college football playoffs. Like, I got to watch. Like, I got to see what happens. It's Friday night too. Friday night, all day Saturday. Let them run around.
There's also NFL on. I'm going to be on my phone looking at my fantasy teams because they're in the playoffs too. While also, I'm completely ignoring everyone. But yeah, looking forward to it.
Dan Lanning. He'll join us at the end of the show after we go over some of these playoff matchups, and obviously his game's coming up, and he's awaiting the winner. Interesting to hear how he's going to prep for this and what will go into it, but he's an unbelievable dude. Cool cat. Known him for a long time. Big Dan Lanning fan. We're going first to Indiana, Notre Dame, because they play first.
Very much so. But I wanted to just sort of, I was looking through, like, why is it so open? Why is it, you know, we got these teams and a lot of teams can possibly win it. We talked about, hey, what's the list of how many can win it? I think I know why. It's because the NFL top tier talent, like first round talent, isn't in the playoff. I went back and looked at last season's playoff. Four teams. So just out of the four teams, 13 of the top 50 picks in the draft were on those four teams. If you'd expand it to 12 teams, you get almost 60% of the first two rounds. This year, if you look at big boards, 15 with 12 teams. Like, in, you know, you got five or six teams that don't have a guy in the top 50 on a big board. So you just don't have first round QBs likely, especially if Aller comes back. It's wide open, and it starts Friday night.
I think that's going to continue to happen and be a byproduct of NIL and the talent spacing out. Like, I think that will continue to be a thing because, again, these guys are getting paid so much money to go to different schools, and the way they allocate their resources is going to be different. And listen, when the barriers come in February there'll be different deals, and there'll be contracts, and there'll be binding contracts for both, like, the school and the player. Right now there's contracts, but it's not binding to the player. It'll be interesting too to see how the different leagues stay competitive, whether it's a bigger deal, a longer deal for teams in a different conference versus another one, because you have to. That's what you have to do to get kids there. And so pretty dang cool. But
Friday night.
I think Friday night's going to be a great game. I do. I know there's some people that are looking at Indiana going, they don't belong here. There's some people that don't think Notre Dame's that good either. So
which is more battle tested?
Where do you think is more?
I'll say, who do you think is more battle tested in a way, though? Because
I could argue
that Indiana actually is.
Yeah. And here's the thing with Notre Dame. I was looking at this earlier, Brent, like, who they've played from a standpoint defensively. They have not played a lot of good defenses. And honestly, I think you've got to go like Army, Navy, and NIU as their best defenses, which specifically pass defense, pass rush, you know, they're just not they haven't been battle tested. But I'll go to the other side, and I'm going to play the other side of the coin real quick too. I've also seen I've seen Indiana battle tested a couple of times, and the best fronts they played with the best pass rush and defenses was Michigan and Ohio State. And it was the worst we've seen of them. So, yes. I mean, I'll give it to you. What do you think then? Like, cause I think both sides, you can make an argument for, I mean, there's a loss to a 23 point loss to Ohio State, which was a big deal in the Indiana game. So
it's one where if you look at, to me, the game, it's who handles the other team's strength better. Like, and Notre Dame is going to blitz. They're going to, when in doubt, they're going to blitz and they're going to play man. Can Rourke and Indiana's offense handle the blitz? Because they didn't handle it well against Ohio State and Michigan, really badly against Ohio State.
Neither one.
And then can Notre Dame run the football? Because that's what they do. And by the way, Indiana is one of the best in the country at stopping the run, limiting yards per carry. They even did it to Ohio State, by the way. If you take away one long run, they had less than 3 yards of carry. So, like, it wasn't like
I don't think that's a great feat this year. I think everybody limits Ohio State, just to be clear. Like, that's not the barometer anymore. And here's the thing about Indiana. If you want to watch this game and you want to know if Indiana's going to win, like, their offense is death by a thousand cuts. It's very on schedule. And if they stay on schedule, like Brent was talking about, and they stay out of those blitz situations, and they can be – and Rourke can use the run pass, and they can stay – when they get one-dimensional, it's a wrap. It's over. It's very, very hard. But if they – I mean, they've scored, you know, 40-plus eight times. Like, this is a good offense, really good offense with a good quarterback, and the key will be can Notre Dame get home. Can Notre Dame stop their running game, which is really efficient, really, really good. So I think it's going to be good. Ellison and Lawton, both of them have 10-plus touchdowns rushing, and they do a good job of running with aggressiveness and falling forward and, like, just keeping them on schedule to get another down. And here's another thing Indiana will do. They're going to be aggressive. Fourth and shorts, hammer down. Like, they know who they are. They know what they want to be, and they're going to go get it. So I think that's something that will be, you know, fun to watch.
Notre Dame gets back Howard Cross, apparently, based upon what I've read. And their drop-off from a defensive line play perspective with him out, it's like taking out that number one guy on your NBA, on your basketball team. Everybody's got to step up, and maybe you're not necessarily ready for it. And it's noticeable how, to me, weak they are defensive line with him not there. That's one thing. The other part, like, there's history going against Notre Dame. I went back and looked the last 30 years in games of either, like, playoff games or what you consider the Big Six bowl games. Now they're 0-10. They basically do what Napster did the first time we met. They
peed themselves,
down their legs a little bit. So
let me ask you a question. Have they played Indiana in that stretch?
They have not played Indiana in that stretch. No,
I mean, they usually play Alabama and some of the best teams, you know, some of the more talented teams. That's why Brian Kelly left, because he didn't have a roster that could compete. Also, too, when I look at Notre Dame, if you want to go history, never had a Friday night game in the stadium ever, which is kind of cool. This will be the first time ever. Love, when you look at Love – and listen, to me, it's Love, Leonard, and Price. Like, it's the law firm that is. Like, all of them are going to get a bunch of carries. Riley Leonard's the quarterback. You know, Price is another running back that's going to come in. All of them, super efficient, touches-wise. Love, 134 attempts, 15 touchdowns. Brent, that's one every nine touch. Like, they spread the ball out to do their damage. They let them be physical and not take too many hits. And I think that's a key for Notre Dame, is spreading that around. They got 12 players with a touchdown reception. Like, there's not a star really for that Notre Dame offense. Like, I think Love is the biggest guy. Leonard is the next guy, but there's a lot of blue collar, a lot of lunch pail things that I think are going for him. But I think Indiana's defense is really physical. I think Notre Dame's offense is really physical. And playing at home doesn't matter. They're both from the same state. Like, not going to be an influence, not going to be a factor. Brent, who's going to win?
I think you've been a Notre Dame bandwagon leader all season. I think I'm going to go against you. I think Indiana wins. I'm going Indiana 24-20.
I got 27-20 Notre Dame. I've got Irish. I also think Al Golden's a really elite defensive coordinator. I like I like the way he does. He mixes in a lot of things to make it very confusing, but I do think it's low scoring. I think the weather hurts the passing game of Indiana. I don't think it hurts the passing game of Notre Dame. When you watch Notre Dame attack the field, it's over the middle. Everything's over the middle. Everything's easy. And if you can get the, and because they get you to have to commit so many guys to the box, they get easy to find man-to-man coverages because of their run game being so good. If Indiana can stop that, they've got a real chance to win the football game.
And Leonard does a good job of being, hey, one read, throw it if it's there, two read, maybe, three, I'm running. It's very quick with him, and he limits a lot of the negative stuff for them. But no,
hey,
I think one upset is happening at least this weekend, and I think it's
so. How about Rourke? 7 sacks in the Ohio State and Michigan game, 9 other sacks in the other 10. Like, Notre Dame can rush the passer. Notre Dame can make life hard on you. Notre Dame's defense, they got 5 pick sixes this season by 5 different guys. They also lead the nation in that. Like, they're great, elite on third down. I think Notre Dame's defense is good enough to get enough stops for them to wear Indiana out with the ground game, with the law firm that is Love, Leonard, and Price, which is fantastic. All right, SMU, Penn State. Next game, SMU traveling to the cold. It will be brisk. It will be chilly.
Yes, very it's much gonna, so. But Coach Lashley said, it's at least at noon. So you're in the daytime as opposed to night when it's even more so cold. But still, the weather is supposed to be in the 20s. So it's not like it's going to be balmy and 65 like it was in Athens today, or 70.
Crazy warm. Rhett Lashley, man, the last two seasons, back-to-back 11-win seasons. They play with a real purpose on offense. They know exactly who they are. They've gotten a bunch of speed guys from all over the place, and Kevin Jennings makes it go. He's the straw that stirs the drink. And I mean, you could obviously add Rashard Smith to that. Like, his ability to run the football, and then they can play action. His ability to make people miss, his ability to catch the ball in the backfield.
Everybody's a target.
But really interested to see, like, SMU playing this kind of a defensive line. They held up well against Clemson, by the way. TJ Parker and company, minus that first drive, like, they really did hold up well. Interested to watch them against Abdul Carter and company with Penn State.
Yeah, I think Jennings is going to have a Superman-esque performance where it's 250-plus throwing, you know, somewhere in the 100, you know, around 100 or maybe a little bit more running, that kind of type performance for him to sustain offense and keep them in this game. But one thing that is actually, if you're thinking about defending Tyler Warren, Penn State's sort of all-world tight end who has more targets than the next two guys on their team combined.
Yeah.
What would you want to have defensively if you were going to have to defend him? You'd want to have a really good safety.
Yeah.
And guess who has a lot of good safeties? That would be SMU.
And company, man.
Wachovia, Moses, McGill, Sanders, like all those guys rotate. It's they're, other than, you know, Roberts at DN and some of the defensive linemen they've had that are Miami transfers, the strength of their defense is their safeties. If you're going to defend Tyler Warren and slow Penn State down. And by the way, the other thing with this, the backup quarterback thing in this game, where if one of these starters goes down,
they
one
both
team has their backup. Well, no, one team has them. Stone, I thought, at least the way I read, was portaling but staying with the team. Perbula
peaced out.
He's, and by the way, I
knew both were in the portal, but yeah, that's so and Perbula's the short yardage package, man. Like he's got a little pack. Now listen, Ty Warren can do that, and he has.
That's going to happen.
And Tyler Warren's been great, but he's been unbelievable, dude. Ty Warren is an animal. We need to respect him, dude. He is Brock Bowers-esque. I mean, that dude leads the nation in receptions for a tight end, yards. Like he's been unbelievable. Like I think I read somewhere where he's like one of 4 players like to ever have, you know, 6 TD receptions and 4 rushing TDs, and he does it, you know, all over the field. Interesting what you said about SMU, because what I wrote down was which weakness can win the best. Like, cause I don't think Penn State, you know, outside of Warren, they have 1500 yards total. Warren to by himself has 1,000, you know, 1062. Mm-hmm. Guys on the outside have not been playmakers. So where SMU isn't great at corner, like Penn State hasn't been great at wide receiver, and they haven't made plays mm-hmm. with their guys. So SMU is weak there, but where does is Penn State good enough to take advantage? To me, this is a Singleton and Allen deal. Like, they got off in the Big Ten championship game. Like, that was fun to watch Penn State in a big game. Listen, we've given them a lot of flack. They flipping pounded the rock. Both of them had over 100 yards. Allen ran the ball well. Like, they ran the jet read a lot. I'm interested to see. And again, here's another thing from a coaching perspective with that, Brent. When you don't have another guy, I don't want to run my guy that much because I have no one behind him with experience that can come in and win a game like he did earlier in the season when I really, really needed it. So, you know, interested to see how much they bring in the Aller into that mix. But Aller, you know, you mentioned him earlier and you said first round type pick, that type of, he's always had that kind of talent. It hasn't matched on the field yet. And we haven't seen that. But we've seen some signs of him continuing to grow, continuing to get better. Like, which quarterback makes the plays? Jennings just threw the ball 50 times in the ACC championship game. He ain't never done that in his career. Like, if I'm asking you right now, Brent, which quarterback do you trust the most? And you have to make that decision of who you're riding with. Like, who you trusting?
I'm going to say Aller just because mainly because he's at home. And a Hoosier, and he's got the one go-to guy. And I think a lot of times in these games, especially if it's tight, having the one guy as the go-to guy, it ends up being the difference maker. But obviously Jennings has his legs, but I'd still go Aller.
I mean Jennings, just the quick release, the off-platform throws, elite athlete, like small but elite. A lot of what SMU does, man, is the inside run game. Like, they literally get the ball to Smith, and it's I think it's inside zone, but it's like literally it's inside, and he kind of picks a hole, finds a spot. Mm-hmm. Can SMU create space? Because Penn State's got some dudes. They got some twitch. They got some speed on defense. SMU, I thought, handled it well against Clemson. I was super impressed. Can they do it again? I think it's a tough ask. I think it's a really tough ask. But – another nugget on Penn State before we go to the next one. Penn State, bro, slow starts have been an issue all year long. Like, Brent, every game I got this daggum notebook full of notes, and I swear to goodness, I go back and I look at Penn State, and it's like slow start, slow start, slow start, slow start. They can't be doing that crap again. And they can't – another thing, they can't kick field goals in the red zone like they consistently do. And I wrote that down a ton. Like, they've got to be more physical. Like, it's that time of year. Can they pound the rock? Can they keep that run game going outside? I got Penn State, but I do think it's close, man. I got 27-21.
I actually went to Penn State by about 10 in this one. I went 26-16. I don't think it gets into the 30s, mainly because of elements. But I think Penn State's probably about 10 points better in this game.
Hey, how about this for respect for Penn State? 10-plus seasons, 10 straight seasons with or 10-plus wins in 3 straight years. Last time Penn State did that, I wasn't alive and you weren't alive. Todd Blackledge was roaming the sidelines. So
maybe big year. Maybe we were alive because that was early 80s, right?
I mean, it was 80 to 82. I mean, so
we kind of were.
Maybe you were. I guess right you there. Were. I'm sorry. You're
barely.
Old, but.
Fairly.
You weren't as follically challenged. I know that back then, but Penn State's had a great couple years. And I think winning a big game, James Franklin winning a big game in the playoffs will go a long way. Cause I'm telling you, man, they got some of the best fans in the country. There you go. Can he win a big game? It's fair to say, I love the absolute onions he showed in the Minnesota game when he goes fake punt on his own side and then goes for it on fourth down. I think you've seen some signs that, you know, that he was really, really good. I think that they can do it. I think they'll get the dub. So
I do. I do as well.
All right. Clemson, Texas.
Afternoon.
Where are you starting?
I mean, this is reunion homecoming galore. You've got Ewers versus Klubnik again. They did it in high school for the state championship. Klubnik.
Who won that matchup?
That would be Klubnik. He's from Austin. He like teammates with some of the guys on the Texas team, the safety 16, playing. So he's playing against former high school teammates. You got Mabuka that's playing against Clemson.
God bless you.
Like it's Makubu. Sorry, I said that wrong. So yeah, a lot of reunion in this game, but also one I think where this feels like a first to 20. This feels like the only way this isn't a close game to me is if Texas is just Banks coming back and Texas is able to just run the ball down Clemson's throat. Cause I think Clemson's going to be able to cover them. And I think Clemson's going to be very aggressive. And I don't know that I trust Quinn Ewers even given the plays that he made in the SEC championship game. So it's running the ball. Can Texas run the football?
He threw for 358, I think, versus Georgia. You still don't trust him?
Less than 60% completion, missed a lot of throws, made some great ones. But Texas fans, I
don't know if you heard that, but he doesn't trust your quarterback. He thinks he's garbage. That's what you probably heard.
I don't know that Texas fans trust their quarterback, by the way.
You know what's interesting? 8 of his 9 top yardage games for his career, Brent, are against ranked opponents. Like, I find that kind of crazy. Like,
yeah,
8 of his best 9 games, 24 straight games with a TD. I think
has playoff experience.
You know, when you look at Texas and where they've struggled this year's offensively is out wide. Like, they are also – they haven't been explosive, Brent. Like, they just haven't. And so they've seen so much man coverage because they're a run-first team. And that's what they've been. And Wisner, you know, has done an unbelievable job, minus the Georgia game down the stretch. The dude was on fire. I mean, he was really, really good. So it's Helm who leads the team in receptions. It's not Bond. It's not Golden. Like, that's the problem with this offense. And who's going to make plays out wide? Golden obviously had 160-plus against Georgia, and he had 100 in the first quarter. I mean, he was great. Yeah, like,
big plays.
They've got to find some explosive plays out wide to help yours, to help the running game. But their defense is going to keep – you're right. Their defense is going to keep them in everything, absolutely everything, because they're so good at every level. But I do think Klubnik, I can't give him enough praise, man. The dude has turned – I mean, third and – okay, he's third in TD passes in everyone in college football, Brent. He's third in the country. Like,
especially after game one, after watching him last year, watching even their spring game, by the way, and then watching Georgia, I would have bet money, a paycheck, that was not be the case at all. And he's completely
If you want to prove you're an absolute football junkie and nerd, when you say I watched the spring game, that's all you need to know about Brent Rollins. Klubnik, third in the nation in touchdown passes, Brent. Who's the top two?
Oh gosh, Cam, is Cam Ward up there?
That should be the easy one.
I mean, Shador and Cam Ward, like that's
yes, Shador and Cam Ward, one and two.
Lucky guess,
pretty good. 33-5 touchdown interception ratio. Clemson on the road this year in true road games, 4-0. Really good on the road. Their kicker just hit a 70,000-yard field goal to win it against SMU, which is part of the reason why they lost the Louisville game. So I do think Clemson can keep it close because you're right. It's Terrell and Hampton and Lucas in the back end. It's those and Khalil Barnes, like KB. Those guys, North Oconee alum, shout out. State champion North Oconee this past week. That secondary I think can do well, but I do think the running game for Texas gets going. I think the outside run against Clemson has been a little bit of a problem. When you watch that, they can do that with Blue. They can do that with Wisner.
It's hard to get the Louisville game out of my mind because Louisville
that was bad.
Ran it down their throat.
And that was bad.
But can Clemson get some of the 50-50 ball? Because I think they're going to have to take chances. And Williams and Wesco are both plus 50% in contested catch situations. Like they're going to have to
Brennan Stuhl's been good. I mean, he's like that. They've got that. That's another thing too. Clemson's got weapons for the first time in a while. Like that's another reason why Klubnik has been successful, because out wide, they've really done an unbelievable job of making plays, like you said, contested catches. You got Brennan Steele, the big 6'5" tight end that works the middle. You got those guys on the outside making plays. So obviously, it's been a great year for Klubnik, man. He definitely deserves a lot of credit, but there's only one seed, and there's only one team that there's only one that can be number one, and
much like Dan Lanning.
Yes, much like the North Oconee Titans, baby. You know, Dan's familiar with the Titans right down the road here with his ears. Yes, awesome. Sir. It was a nice night, Monday night. It was fun. Brent has a son that plays safety too, so it was cool. It was a team effort. But hey, how's it been, Coach? Just I'm not gonna say you've had time off because the transfer portal shows us that there is no time off in recruiting, but was it nice to get a little bit of a break for the kids mentally and physically from a long season?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a good change of pattern. You know, football's so much routine. You're doing the same things every day. To get to change that up for our players a little bit, I think it was good for our players, good for our coaches. And certainly there's some other things we're juggling right now. But overall, it's been really good.
Coach, when you look at this playoff system, like I know your personality, and I know you don't give a crap what your seat is and where you're at. Like, put the ball in the middle, and I'll hit you in the mouth. And your post-game press conferences and big games shows that. But, like, what do you think about the system and where we're at with it and with, like, the transfer portal and stuff? Like, that's a hard deal for you guys preparing for a game, you know, dealing with all of that stuff, people leaving. Like, what can we do with this system, or how do we make changes, or what do you think of the system and how it's structured?
Well, I think the people that really control football need to take a deep dive into the calendar, because the calendar just doesn't make a lot of sense with the structure, the way it's set up. You know, you got players that are part of winning teams that feel like they have to leave because they know their opportunity might be somewhere else. There's a model for the playoff, but we didn't seem to decide to follow anyone else's model that's done playoffs before. We kind of created our own, and I think we're all realizing there's issues with that. So it's kind of like what I've said before is, before we make any more rules, let's look at the consequences and decide what's the good and the bad of all those decisions. Sometimes it feels like we're a lot more reactionary in college football than proactive.
Do you think you should have a home game as the one seed, like with that bye? Do you think your guys should be rewarded with that?
I mean, I don't really care. The model is what the model is. I would say this, in my mind, the NFL has been doing playoffs for a long time. That's how it works in the NFL. FCS has been doing playoffs in college football for a long time. That's how it works there. So there's probably a lot of merit to that. I think what's happening right now in college football is people are trying to solve a lot of problems and make people happy along the way. Like the bowls, if you're doing a playoff system, don't necessarily make sense, but there's these bowl games that people still want to be part of the playoff, right? So you're trying to manufacture and make the bowl games happy because there's money that comes in there, and still have a playoff that exists. But yeah, I think there's some real challenges behind that, and we'll see what it looks like, I guess, in the future.
Coach, I love the way you like embrace atmospheres and embrace tough. And I think about Colorado a year ago. I think about, you know, cause we got to see some of that. I've seen so much of your pregame stuff, the jump around. I thought at Wisconsin was one of the dopest things I saw this year. Like, your players embracing moments. The timeout at Michigan was fantastic to let everybody leave. But how do you embrace those atmospheres, and how have you decided as a coach, like, how you want to take on those moments that you seize?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that's probably been the most exciting for me. You know, I'm getting to play in a lot of venues. Our team's getting to play in a lot of venues that I've never been to. So, you know, being now in the Big Ten, getting to experience some of those historic places like the Big House, you know, and next year we're going to get to go some different places as well. So that's the excitement around college football. I mean, I think it's hard to argue right now that college football isn't the most exciting sport, you know, around. In a lot of ways, much more exciting even than the NFL and what it incorporates. But the alumni, the fans, I think all that is part of what makes college football so special. And we certainly choose here at Oregon to embrace those things.
All right, so follow up to that. Do you watch the awesome cinematic videos that your social team puts out? And are you campaigning for a Best Supporting Actor nomination award, anything like that? Because those things are amazing.
Well, we definitely screen them before they go out. And there's probably a lot of stuff that you guys probably watching and are like, dang, I can't believe they put that in. There's a lot more that we remove than what makes the cut. So I think it's great. You know, for us, everything's built around who are you trying to add to your program as well, right? When you're building recruiting, we think those videos give a great glimpse for a player. What's it like to be a part of our program? Then it's certainly fun for our fans to be able to kind of see the story put together. I think everybody sees Saturday, and sometimes they forget all the hard work that came into getting to Saturday. So those have been fun for us and certainly give a glimpse into our program.
So he coach, watches, when
yep. Oh, 100%. You got to have your hands in on everything. That's
you,
for sure.
Yeah, you wear every hat. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, when you look at like coach, when you're a young coordinator, man, like you got linked with a bunch of different head coaching jobs and you know, you kind of had a choice to pick where you wanted to be. Like, why Oregon? Like, what is the reason that Oregon? And obviously, you've made a commitment to them. And I know, like, you've obviously built a program, but why Oregon?
Yeah, for me, I'd never been here. I'd never land. You know, the minute I got off the plane here was my first time in Oregon. But from afar, I already knew a lot of what the program was about. You think about Oregon, you think about innovation, you think about cutting edge. A willingness to adapt. And I probably think that's the most important trait right now in college football is your ability to adapt and adjust. And I knew it was a beautiful area. And we've just fallen in love with it since we've been here. But Oregon took a chance on me too. And, you know, I felt like we could build a winner here. I felt like we could have a team that could have sustained success. And that's starting to come, you know, down the tracks for us right now. So we're really enjoying being here. The administration, the alignment from top down, is really special. Like I love working with our athletic director, Rob Mullins. I love what the university stands for, how they're willing to, you know, be on the cutting edge when it comes to new facilities and, you know, just changing, you know, the environment changing. So that's been a blessing for us being here.
I know you've probably answered the, hey, what'd you take most from your time with Coach Smart and what'd he teach you, all those sort of things. So let's go a different route with that. What was something you watched Coach Smart and you said, all right, I can't do that, coach. That's not me. I can't be that. I got to do something else.
Well, I'll just say this. Working with Kirby, I probably got to see it firsthand because I was with Nick before at Alabama. And I realized really quickly that Kirby, you know, running the Georgia program, he was Kirby. He was authentic. You know, he was himself. And I realized in my mind, that's what works. You have to be you. So I'll never be Kirby. I'll never be Nick. But there's a ton of things I learned from both those guys. And, you know, there's some – I think every coach, sometimes your greatest strength can be your greatest weakness. I think that's something I'm really conscientious of. I mean, guys that have a lot of passion, sometimes that can be a real positive, and then sometimes that can be a negative. Your highs can get a little too high and your lows can get too low. But being around guys like Nick and Kirby have really let me know, hey, be the best version of yourself, work really hard, be willing to challenge yourself from a standpoint of what can I get better at, how can I improve? And if you do those things, then you're going to be able to have consistent growth.
Well, and kids obviously know the difference. I mean, they know when you're not being yourself, and they read through that. So, coach, you had a 47-year-old quarterback last year. Now you got a 50-year-old quarterback. Like, how about, like, just being able to get a guy like that with so much experience in Dylan Gabriel and, like, coming into this program and knowing what you have day one from an experience standpoint, but also somebody that – I mean, I saw with all the relationships that he was able to build right away, like how important was that for you to get that spot solidified and go get Dylan? And what did you see in him?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've certainly have seen the benefits of having guys like Dylan and Bo here. And, you know, both of them are uniquely themselves as well, but they both have tremendous poise. I think that's the one thing that really sticks out to me about Dylan, that there's no moment that's too big or too small. He really embraces that. They're both really challenged themselves to get better. And Dylan's a guy that I think you see a different player now than you did even at Oklahoma. I mean, he's playing the best in the biggest moments. He's making great decisions, really accurate with the ball. So we're blessed to have him. I mean, you can't play great football right now in college football without a great quarterback. And we certainly have that.
So another addition from the transfer portal that I looked at, okay, great player, but the pass rush ability from Derek Harmon, like, I've saw him as a great run defender, but this year it's another level as a pass rusher. What was it? You're like, okay, that guy can anchor a defensive line, but also do a lot of other things maybe that he didn't do in the past.
Well, I think that's one of the first things we probably looked for when I first got here is how do we make sure that our team has the size and the speed necessary, especially in the front, when you start playing these games down the stretch that really matter, because I feel like that's where games are won. Regardless of what conference you're in, what league you're in, you know, winning football at the end of the year when it matters, you better have the big boys up front on both sides of the ball. And Derek fit that bill. And then, you know, he came here and he knew what things he wanted to get better at, right? He was really intentional with, okay, I see myself. What I'm really impressed with Derek is he wants to be coached, right? And David knows this, like when you're around like great players just, they want you to tell them how they can improve. And Derek attacks it every single day. He's relentless on the field. And I think his game's really improved since he's been here. And he's been a force to be reckoned with for teams that have played us.
So you're talking question. About you're talking about question. these transfer portal guys and you know and now Dan, the difference between taking one of those guys coming in and blending with high school recruiting. We talked to Rhett Lashley, you know, a couple weeks ago about it, and just the line that you have to walk and how you do that and how you bring them along. What's been the best, you know, strategy for you, or how have you, you know, wave or kind of how do you do both at the same time?
Well, firstly, I think you have to be really upfront and transparent with your team. You know, our job is always to put ourselves in the best position to win games and have success here. But everybody can grow in that process. And for us, you know, our foundation is still high school recruiting. We've done a really good job bringing in great talent and developing talent. Like our left tackle right now, Josh Connerly, is having an unbelievable year. And he came here as a freshman, and there's several players on our team like that. So we want to be able to do both. We want to be able to develop guys from the ground up, but we want to challenge ourselves to create competition throughout our team when there's somebody that can enhance our program. And then all that being said, what's really important is that those guys are connected and they get along with each other, and there's a healthy locker room. And we do a lot of different things to create that. On Monday night, just the other day, the entire team came over to my house and we had meal together and fellowshiped, and the guys broke out later on and in our garage for a player only meeting. You know, I wasn't in there. I don't know what happened in there, but it was their meeting. It was their time. I think those genuine moments where they get an opportunity to connect with each other is one of the things that separates us.
All right. So coach, obviously you got the playoffs start this week and you have one side of the bracket that is not your side. That is Friday night, first thing Saturday. And then you've got two that are on your side of your bracket. And obviously the game at 8:00. How are we watching this? Are we hanging out with the fam on Friday, early Saturday, then everybody team or whatever coaches watching there? What's the plan for watching this weekend?
Well, we'll probably be juggling a couple things like other teams are. We'll have some guys in that are probably visiting us that are considering coming here. We're going to have practice Saturday morning. So we'll practice that morning, have a little bit of meetings that afternoon with our coaching staff. And then my hope is that I can find a TV screen by myself with my iPad and watch this game and take some notes. That's the hope.
Well, coach, one of my favorite moments of the year this year was offense cheats like a mug, right? They cheat all the time. That's what they do. Every rule is skewed towards offense. That's the way it is. If you don't like it, by the way, and you're listening, too bad. That's the way it is. It's set up for the offense to succeed. They can shift, they can motion, they control the snap count, they can do all these different things. But what you did against Ohio State late in that football game, you changed the rule book. Like you literally, it's funny. I find it so fascinating that like we can't address things till after the season. Dan, they changed your rule the next week, bro. Like they literally were like, no, the defense can't have that advantage. Like what – did you know that that could be a possibility that you could use that? Because that was one of the absolute best moves we've seen all year long.
Certainly a weapon in that game. I wish our execution was a little bit better. But you're always looking for advantages, right? And this is something learning that back in my time with Coach Saban, the amount of details we would go into when it came to situations. And I think you're always looking for that. You're looking for that edge, and you want to be able to do whatever you can in that moment. It certainly was one that paid off for us earlier this year.
Yeah, that's cool, man. We appreciate your time. We know you are busy, and but no, best of luck to you in the playoff, coach, and it's been fun to watch you succeed and do it your way. So thanks for joining us, my man.
Absolutely. Hey, congrats on the state championship. That's big time.
Thank you, coach.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Yeah, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, or if you don't remember, it was Ohio State late in the football game, and basically absolutely on purpose put 12 men on the field because the clock was going to run. It gave him more, field to cover, obviously.
Didn't they double Smith? Was it?
They literally put him towards the trips, like towards his side, like to that side of the field where you got more bodies to where their receivers were. But I'm just telling you, Brent, like, you've met me and you've known me for a long time. And what have you always said about me? I'm what? I'm
the most competitively intelligent person I've ever been around.
Dan Lanning is like he spits fire. He breathes nails. Like I'll never forget like some of the sideline games and just like before we played Bryce Young in the SC championship game and just talking to him on the sideline, he's just like, oh yeah, we're going to do this. And his eyes, and he's so intense. He's such a good dude. He's a good family man. Like, I can promise you this past offseason, there was some big coaching hires at some big universities, and you can take this for what it's worth. Like, that guy could have gotten a truck backed up to him, and he could have moved his destination, but he's that kind of guy, man. He is a committed guy. He wants to win at Oregon. He's not going to stop until he wins at Oregon. It's why this summer when we talked about teams, man, I'm like, listen, Oregon, if it's a stock, it's Apple. Like, I'm buying every bit of it in that company because him first, resources, development, Phil Knight, obviously, that's a big deal. Like, they've got everything trending in the right direction for Oregon to be great and to continue to be great.
Well, and they just showed it in the recruiting perspective. Like, it was, top one or two, three, something like that class, depending upon what one you look at. I forget what he was on Rivals. But the blueprint is there, and he just took it west. It went from one place to a little further east, and now he took it west, and there we go. But by the way, we get to talk about one last game, which is who they're going to play in the quarterfinals, because we didn't get to talk about the night game, the nightcap, Tennessee.
Yeah, and when I talked to him, Brent, like last time when I screwed up the schedule on when it was supposed to be.
Good job by you, by the way.
Yeah, great job by me. Number one team in the country, coach is going to come on. Hey, just screw up the time. I screwed that up. I mean, just he's pretty simple, man. Like, I don't care. Like, I could give a rat's ace who we're playing, bring that shiznick on. And he didn't use those words. But I'm just telling you, like, Dan ain't scared of nobody. He ain't worried about it. He likes his squad. And so I know he's not worried about that. But this is the most intriguing game to me, Brent. This is the hardest game for me to pick out of all the games so far. That's how much I think stylistically, this is a good matchup for Tennessee. Like, I look at Tennessee and I look at who they are and what they are and what has given Ohio State the most trouble this season. I feel like Tennessee fits that mold with a great run game, a physical front seven that will slap you in the mouth, that can rotate. And Brent, we've seen, man, Ohio State has every position on the field with a big check mark. Check, except for arguably the most important position in the country, and that's an offensive line. And listen, I don't think it's their fault. Like, their left tackle is a first-round pick, and he's gone. Simmons gets hurt. Like, their center gets hurt. So they've dealt with a lot of injuries at the wrong spots for their team. Like, they have Judkins and Henderson. Like, they could afford an injury at receiver. They could afford an injury a lot of places, but the offensive line really wasn't one of them.
No, and then one other spot like the matchup part of this other spot is maybe where is their weakest point on defense? At corner. And which team attacks outside the numbers as much as anyone in the country? That would be Tennessee, and spreads you out and makes your corners play and makes your corners mentally
all right, stop work there. Consistent stop in the there. Game, all that. That's a great point, but I want to put you on the spot with this. They do stretch you because of their alignment. Guys, they line up so far wide. Tennessee's the widest in the country. Their receivers are almost to the sidelines. Their other guys, they stretch you so far this way so they can pass and they can create space. Brent, do you trust Nico? Do you think Nico is good enough to go into Columbus and make the plays to get it done?
As long as he has some element of time, yes. Like, unless he's just under instantaneous pressure most of the game, And I don't, I mean, and I think that's what my number one note on this game is, which O-line stinks the least? Because wow, both aren't good. Which is going to play not
tell me your offensive line sucks without telling me your offensive line sucks. that's like me using ungood for people. They're very ungood, Brent. Ungood.
Yes. Like, so if Tennessee gives him time, the running game, the tempo, by the way, as much as you like the teams in the SEC, you think, okay, well, Tennessee doesn't score. Well, guess what? Those teams are used to practicing and playing against that, much like some teams are used to practicing against and playing against the triple option. Like, it's a different animal, and you can practice all you want until you're doing it live bullets. It's a different thing. So there's elements. I agree with it in terms of the difficulty in handicapping and picking one side of this game. But to me, it all comes down to Ryan Day and how is he loose, aggressive Ryan Day that we saw against Georgia in the Peach Bowl in 2022, or is he
after he lost to Michigan, he did it again. He lost to Michigan and then.
Or is he tight, can't get a grease BB up his hind end, Ryan Day? Like, because that's what he looked like against Michigan.
So here's the thing, too, with me. When I asked you that Nico question for a reason, because Nico comes out the first week, and then you got idiots like me going, Heisman Trophy good. Like, I mean, I saw him, Brent, like, I saw him attack the middle of the field, and I saw him attack deep. Like,
the layering
literally he looked like the best player, like at that position in the country, one of the best. And you saw the trigger, you saw the elite arm talent, you saw the wheels when he needed to run, you saw him throwing on the run. I literally made a checklist when I was watching his tape, and I was like, dude, throwing on the run, deep ball, you know, intermediate. And then that was his only 300 yard passing game of the season, literally. He never cracked over 300. Like, he never did it again. And if you're looking for the other side of the coin, man, Tennessee's 2-2 on the road. Like, they've really struggled on the road. He struggled to continue to, you know, to make plays. The thing I look at with Nico is 8 touchdown passes in the last 2 weeks. They don't have a superstar out wide, by the way. Like, a lot of guys have been banged up. There is no dude out wide. But 8 touchdown passes the last 2 games, less overthrows on the deep balls. I feel like his experience grew. He got better. Because, by the way, he had 8 touchdown passes, Brent, in 9 games before that. Yep. 9 games total. So I feel like he got it together and he got better. And the weather, obviously, it could be miserable at night. I mean, this could be -1 or it could be 20, you know, and it'll be tough. And the throwing games are limited then. But that doesn't hurt Tennessee, because Tennessee spreads you out and Tennessee runs. Like, that's who they are. That's what they are. Samson is their best player, has been all year. I mean, there is not a lot of space, but Dylan Samson finds it. Like, dude, think about Jamal Lewis and about the elite backs in Tennessee history. This dude's number one in the history of rushing in their school. Like, he didn't play in an SEC championship game yet either, by the way. So don't give me an extra game crap. Like, he's going to get an extra game. The only thing he's done wrong this year is fumble the football, and it's kept him out of some games. But Dylan Samson has been a hammer. Like, he has been – he consistently falls forward, consistently makes people miss, and then this offense goes another first down, another first down. And when they get another one, they crank the tempo. And those 4-yard runs, Brent, those 3-yard runs in the first half turn into 6-yard runs. They turn into 7-yard runs. And so it'll be interesting to watch Ohio State and if they can keep up and not let that happen.
I don't know that. I mean, the run defense, yes, but the combination of the tempo, I will say, in totality, I think Ohio State is the more talented team.
Yep, agree.
And Ohio State should win this football game. How they play. Okay. Do they play aggressive?
So who are you picking is the question.
I think Ohio State actually gets it done, because I think there's an element today where it comes out like much like against Georgia, and it's aggressive. I don't give a rip. I'm going to just let it rip and go and push the ball down the field, use my receivers, get the ball to them as much as possible, do everything I can, get to, by the way, and get to 20 points first, because I think whoever gets to 20 points first in this game is going to win as well.
That's not the first time you've said that, and I think that shows you where college football is this year. Like it used, we got to a point a couple years ago. It was like, it's like first to 40.
If you can't play in the 30s, you're done.
You're out. Yeah, yes. Like you're done. You've seen kind of a return of the Mac defense, which winning championships, which I think is pretty good. Man, I've went back and forth. I got a pick because I'm going to do that. I think I'm going Tennessee on the road, and I think I'm going like a daggum 19-16. Like just. Yeah. Ugly offensive line play, you know, I think that, listen, Tennessee's weakness is their secondary. McCoy's good, but can you take advantage of their linebackers, their safeties? But you got to be able to run the football. Like, you got to have some of that. But I just think the offensive line for – I think the offensive line for Ohio State is really going to struggle to block Tennessee's front. And I think their rotation of guys that can stay fresh and the running game for Tennessee – finds a way to get it done, and I think Tennessee wins, and it's crazy.
We talked about this last week at that stadium with the pressure and all the issues that are going on there. If Tennessee gets out early, does that become like vultures on their coach kind of situation?
I mean, if Herb Street said it about exactly. The fans, you know, it's real, and you're going back to the. To the scene of the crime where it was 10-13 loss to Michigan, you know, and but I think it's a pick 'em. I am not going to be surprised at all with Ohio State winning. Like, will not be surprised. Ohio State's got an elite team. They're really good. Like, but the passing game, it needs some running game, and they got to get that going. And I think you look at the QB, bro. He played his worst game against Michigan. I think Tennessee's got enough, you know, in the front seven to do what Michigan has done, it did to them. And then, you know, the running game and the big plays. But I think it's
one last tight. One last thing about Tennessee's defense that might be intriguing for this game. They played Georgia right after Georgia played Ole Miss. Ole Miss gave them the blueprint. Play a lot of two high quarters, let our front four eat. Don't need to do much other than that. They went and played Georgia, 8 in the box, single high, all that. They go play that style against Ohio State. Jeremiah Smith and Igbuka and Tate are going to feast on the one-on-ones, I think. So Michigan just gave the blueprint. Follow the blueprint. If you're
I understand what you're saying, but number three at corner, McCoy – that dude's the truth now. Like, I'm letting him play. He played Ryan Williams really well. Like, I'm letting him outside. He makes plays, man. Interception the last two games. I think he's got 4 picks on the year. Like, I'm letting him eat a little bit. But you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. But it's gonna be a great game. I think we'll be live. I think we'll be live Friday night after the Indiana game. Mm-hmm. We'll talk Notre Dame and Indiana. Then we'll talk Saturday night, and it's going to be cool, man. We'll get to the other teams too that are in this thing. Thank you, Dan, for joining us. And shoot, Christmas is around the corner if you don't feel like it. But quick shout out to Carson Rollins, you know, balling out. North Oconee Titans winning the state championship. I'm a small part of what they do over there and excited to be on the staff. And I just love those kids, man. And we had a great season and did something total we've never effort. Done. It is. Total
in
team
a big
effort.
Game like that, every kid made plays. Michael Fabris.
Yeah.
Not going to play down at the end of the game. Not going to, you know, jump ball situation.
Brody JT Taylor Luster. Coming up huge. Yes. You know, a couple
Kamari of JT Brooks Doster, completely dominated the game. Harrison Faulkner made plays. It was just. Landon
Faulkner, that name sounds familiar. Landon Roldan will sound familiar. He's a Georgia commit. Kamari Brooks is going wherever he wants in the country. So these guys might be on your team soon in the future.
Like, you coached them all, obviously, but we, even when they were kids, we coached 20, almost half these kids. So it was a joy to watch. It was amazing.
Yeah, baby. So we'll see y'all Friday night. It'll be fun. We'll do the recap right afterwards, and we'll get this 12-team playoff started with some home football games, home atmospheres. Let's see how much the crowd gets involved. And thanks, y'all, for joining us all year long, and we'll see you later.